Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. Today we're going to take a look at holiday houseplants, among other things, with our guest Tova Martin back with us. She is the author of many gardening books, a horticulture industry veteran. She's a speaker and trainer, and we'll talk to her about caring for holiday plants and take your other houseplant and gardening questions as well. She can cover a lot of areas, but and I hope you'll join in. What questions do you have about keeping your poinsettia or maybe your Norfolk pine healthy? Are you having a problem with one of your houseplants? Join in the conversation. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Tova Martin, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Well, Merry Christmas and all good things, Larry.
Well, I tell you what, it's always good to check in with you every year. And I always ask you this question. How many houseplants do you have these days?
Oh, I have just as many as ever, Larry. I mean, my home, I take pretty much every window gets filled in with plants. Every autumn, I think, I'm going to cut down a little bit on the number of houseplants, and every year I somehow managed to increase. I don't know. I wonder what would happen if I didn't promise myself, you know, if I didn't start out with a little discipline on this.
Well, I've often wondered if you had a storage shed to hold all of your potting soil and your fertilizers and all the accoutrements.
You know, Larry, I think this is a really good point to swing in with this because, you know, the containers that you use for houseplants, they can make things so beautiful, and they can also take a plant that you're giving, and when you personalize it by potting it up into a beautiful container, that just adds to the... That makes it so personal.
I think you're absolutely right. I like to do that as well. I know when my mother was retiring, I might have told you this story. She was retiring and she was cleaning out the house and she said, "Well, would you like some of those pots back?" And I go down in the basement and I realized... There were a couple of, I don't know, maybe 40 or so pots.
Wow. Same thing happened to me. You hadn't told me that story before, but exactly the same thing happened to me that my mother said, you know, dear, maybe you should take some of the pots back from all those amaryllis you gave me and things like that. And I went into, same thing, I went into the storage room, and they were the most beautiful containers. I brought them home, and they made for presents for many other people. It's really a way to personalize it. I think that's what gift-giving is all about anyway.
I agree with you. You know, already we've got Charlie from Wisconsin Rapids with a question, so let's just go there. Charlie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
So we'd gotten a begonia during the spring, and we had it outside, and it, you know, got, you know, nice and full, and we tried to bring it in to winter it, you know, bring it in the house over the winter. But it seems to not be doing well now, and we've tried to move it around to get it enough sun, but do they just not do well after you bring them in, or are we doing something wrong? Or
Charlie, I'm going to ask you first off, do you have any idea what type of begonia it is that you brought in?
I can't, you know, my fiance is the one that bought it, but it's one of those ones, like, the leaves were... multiple colors. They're almost kind of metallic, shiny when the light would hit it. I'm not sure what kind that is, but...
Okay. Was it... I was just wondering because there are tuberous begonias with lots and lots and lots of flowers, and they go dormant in the fall. But it sounds like you've got either an angel wing type or maybe a rhizomatous type if the foliage is colorful. Here's some advice, and you can tell me if this is what fits what you've been doing with your begonia, because ultimately they really prefer to have indirect light, and so an east or west window would be great for it. They like the temperatures that we like. Basically, they like to grow about 55 to 65 degrees is nighttime temperatures. That's ultimate, their favorite temperatures. They like, they don't like to be overwatered. They like to dry out between waterings. And they also, now this just ties in with what Larry and I were just talking about, containers. They don't like deep containers. Their roots are very shallow, and they go horizontally. So they like a very shallow container. And if you have them in too large a container, they will tend to rot. So any of that, think any of that helps?
I hope it does.
Yes.
Good. Charlie, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too at 800-642-1234 or email to talk@wpr.org. Tola, what are your favorite plants this time of year? I'm sure all your plants are favorites, but what are your favorites this time of year?
You know, we've been talking tropicals, but here's my secret is that I'm going a little bit more toward bringing plants indoors that I love from the outdoors. So, for example, I picked up, and you might still be able to do this, pick up some, like, heucheras and heucherellas and tiarellas and all kinds of plants like that. I even grow little blue stem indoors. So I bring the outdoors in. Those are some of my favorite things to do. It makes me feel like my garden has brought me indoors. But besides that, I'm also very fond of my Norfolk Island pine. You just mentioned those. And they are one of my favorites because, again, they make me feel like the outdoors is inside. I also love to bring in any type of, sometimes I have evergreens in, things like, all my junipers and that sort of thing. I keep some of them in pots clustered around the front door. So I bring those in, too, to make me feel like the garden's indoors.
I like that idea. That's great. Well, you mentioned Norfolk Island pine, and I did as well. It's not really, though, a pine, is it?
Well, it is not. It's in the Araucaria family, but it just reminds us of the outdoors. I'm not sure that one's in the Araucaria. But anyway, it reminds us of the outdoors, and it is not hardy for you or I. I'm actually in Connecticut, so that lets your audience know that we have similar cold issues here. but it will not tolerate winter outdoors, but it's a lovely little reminder of, the parks and the beauty outdoors brought inside sort of in miniature. And it's a great houseplant. It can tolerate so much forgetfulness with watering and that sort of thing.
Is it susceptible to, I don't know, insects or disease?
Nothing. This is so easy. I'm talking, close as they come to indestructible, I think. This little plant will tolerate a lot, including, forgetfulness with watering can and maybe not loving to repot things. It doesn't need to be repotted. It can take really tight container and be fine.
Let's turn our attention to poinsettias for a minute. I mean, you can hardly go into a store, even a gas station, without seeing poinsettias for sale. There are so many variations of color. How's that variation achieved, by the way, that color variation?
Well, it's all in breeding, of course, but, you know, what you need to know, listeners might not know, is that that intense color, those are the bracts and not the flowers. The flowers are kind of small and not very remarkable, yeah. But the bracts around them are what they make that, you know, that makes that really incredible color. And boy, do they work hard on that. They just are always thinking up ways to make your poinsettias more gorgeous. I think, you know, just between you and me, that poinsettias are one of the more challenging houseplants. I think. Don't know. What do you think, Larry?
Well, I've never had great luck with them.
I think they're like temporary.
Yes, exactly.
They're like your house guests, you know? They might leave after the holidays, you know? I don't think they're great long-term guests in your home. The poinsettias, they are best enjoyed over the holidays, and then I suggest before the relationship turns sour, you might want to just, send them off to the wild blue compost.
Well, while you have them, what about watering them? How much water do they need?
They are a little bit more on the thirsty side. You don't want to let a poinsettia wilt. And they are, you know, they're South American plants. They're used to a tropical situation. So I would say, you know, Larry, you know my theory, Larry, that I don't believe in saying it's Tuesday on the calendar, it's time to water. I believe in checking the soil and seeing if it's dry to your touch and then watering the plant because, really, every week and every day is different weather-wise, and the weather outside affects how often you need to water, how often your furnace goes on, how sunny it is in the windowsill, that sort of thing affects your poinsettia.
Yeah. And to keep them for a year, which we've had people do it, it's an operation.
It is. And you know why put yourself while they're not really doing great, they can get red spider mite, they can get aphids. They can get all kinds of things. They can get I think they're most prone to the white flies, those little tiny flies that kind of flit around. So all those things can become issues. And, what I don't like them to do is I don't like them to jeopardize my other houseplants.
Yeah. Tova Martin, our guest today as we talk house plants with her. We could take general gardening questions as well with her. Pretty much everything. She's knows a lot. You can join in. The number's 800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News and Garden Talk. Glad to have you along for Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. Coming up in the last half hour of the show, just wanted to mention we'll have a tea plant grower with us, and we'll talk about growing tea plants or camellia indoors. That during our last half hour of the show. Right now, though, we're talking houseplants and other plants with our guest, Tova Martin. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 or email to talk@wpr.org. Anne in Granton has a question. Let's go there. Hello, Anne.
Hello, Larry and Tova Martin. I think I got your name right. I have a peace lily that just has not been happy. I've tried watering it a little. I've tried watering it a lot. I just can't get it to be cheerful.
You know, peace lilies are a little bit of a challenge. Optimally, I find that they don't really like to dry out. They like a little bit, you know. I wouldn't really classify them as an indestructible houseplant. They get an attitude. They begin to, I guess, look a little less than perfect if you don't keep up with the watering. That said, they don't like to be overwatered either. So I think when I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, maybe you went to two different extremes here. Maybe you didn't water enough, and then you thought, oh, gee, this plant isn't happy. What can I do? I'll switch my gears and go in the opposite direction. So I think maybe moderation in all things. Go the median route and just water it when the soil is dry. You know, what I always do, Anne, I always check the soil when I first get a plant. And because I'm often repotting into a nicer container anyway, I don't think twice about, giving it a better soil. That's always an option. Only graduate it if the roots are very much filled the container. But still, you might want to give it a little fresh soil.
And what's just potting soil?
Yeah. There's such great potting soils out now. Unfortunately, there are each region has its own brands that are carried in garden centers. But I like a soil that has a lot of – I like a soil with perlite rather than vermiculite. I like a soil that, isn't all just mossy, just sphagnum mossy. I like an organic soil that has real compost included into it.
And there you go. Good luck to you. Thank you so much for calling. Alisa in Oshkosh, we'll go to you. Hi, Alisa.
Hello.
Hi, what can we do for you?
My question is about the pathos. What can I do to encourage leaf growth once they fall off of the vine? They seem to be pretty good staying on the vine. And then if we move it to change rooms, I've been growing a big one that we want to put on my, what was that?
No, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. So it gets, the leaves fall off if we move it into another room because we want to trail it along the ceiling. I was wondering if it doesn't like the change of light or what am I doing wrong with the pathos?
I didn't think that pathos were really sensitive some plants are. Interestingly, Larry is going to be having a tea specialist, and tea is in the camellia family. And camellias, traditionally don't like to be moved around a lot. And I'm sure his expert could speak into that. But I didn't know it was an issue with pathos. I guess the answer to that, if you're having trouble with it being moved, is to try to keep it in the same spot. And because it is a vine, I'm wondering if you're, like, having to actually remove it from whatever it's being trellised on, because it does vine. But basically, what you should probably do, just keep in mind, is to try to give it the same exposure. If it's in an east window, keep that the same, that sort of thing. And also just remove it as gently as you possibly can without tearing off any of the little, adhering appendages that are keeping it where it was.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very good idea. Alisa, thank you very much for calling. Let's go to Lynn in Sparta next. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, yes. I have a ficus plant. I had one that was probably given to me about 30 years ago, and we've trimmed it because they keep growing. And one of the trims, I rooted it and planted it on a pot. And now it is about 3-4 feet tall. It's in a pretty big pot. I have repotted it a couple times as it grows. But now it just seems to be dropping leaves. And it seems like when after I water it, it seems to drop more. But I don't water until I feel like it's dry, that I need to water it. So can you tell me about the dropping leaves?
My nephew had a ficus, and it sounds like you're quite experienced with ficus, but for maybe other listeners, I just want to explain that some of these ficus really are trees, and any tree, as it matures, will drop lower leaves, making the stem more of a stem. So that often, I had to explain that to my nephew, that, you're bound to get some leaf drop toward the bottom. But in general, Lynn, you're doing really well to keep a ficus for 30 years because they are tend to be not so easy indoors. They tend to be a little bit of a challenge for many people. So the dropping leaves, what I would suggest is, it sounds like you also might be going a little to extremes on the watering. Do it more, just do it more on a regular basis. Don't wait for the soil to dry out too much. And also, you might also check, while this plant is young and making a lot of growth, you might need to check that container and make sure it isn't too pot-bound, that it might need a repotting more rapidly than your older, mama plant.
Yeah. That's possible, for sure. Lynn, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. I kept a ficus, I think it was about 12 years.
Wow.
Which I thought was pretty good.
Very good.
Kara emailed that she has tried so many times to grow rosemary and just can't keep it alive indoors. Do you have any tips on rosemary and keeping it alive indoors?
I do, Kara. Kara, you are not alone. Rosemary has been a challenge for centuries to grow indoors. In fact, people would weigh into it hundreds of years ago. It was one of the earlier houseplants because people loved their herbs. And they loved, you know, they utilized their herbs, so they wanted to bring their herbs indoors. So it was really one of the earliest houseplants in this country and probably in Europe as well. But they are not easy. They like, I'll tell you what they like. Rosemary likes it cool. It likes bright light. And it likes a, you know, it doesn't like a very dry atmosphere. So all those things can jeopardize, you know, if they're not tweaked perfectly, they can jeopardize your rosemary. But I also want to just suggest that, you know, for you and for other listeners, some of the easier, the rosemary that I personally find the most easy to grow is the rosemary, the prostrate rosemary as a houseplant. That's one of your easier rosemaries to host indoors. So try all those things, especially if you have like happen to have like a cool room that's maybe not, you know, maybe even a room with maybe south-facing windows that you don't, is not your, you know, bedroom that you keep very warm or something like that. That's the best place to host your rosemary.
There you go. Thanks so much for that question. I had an emailer write in about an old elephant foot plant. Elephant foot plant. It's about dinner plate size at the base. It's too heavy to lift and hard to get a pot much bigger than the one that's already it resides in. Do large plants like that need repotting, or can the person remove some topsoil only and fertilize it to keep it healthy?
That's a really good question, and that could go across the board for all, you know, your listeners' houseplants. I don't feel as though you have to keep repotting and repotting, you know, giving it graduations, because that's going to lead to a heavy plant. What you might want to do instead is, as the listener suggested, maybe remove a little bit of soil and maintain the status quo, or give it a little bit more fertilizer. You know, give it some fertilizer. In general, I don't fertilize between Thanksgiving and March 1st. But if a plant is thirsty, I mean hungry, I do some fertilizer, yeah. You know, you really have to do what works for the plant.
Yeah, makes sense. Barb in Milwaukee has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Barb.
Hi, I'm calling about the Thanksgiving or Christmas cactus. I have about four or five of them, but one of the oldest one often has very, very pale green or light yellow leaves, stem sections, instead of the lush green. And I'm just wondering how to prevent that.
Paler, it's just that part of the plant, or is the whole plant looking a little stressed?
No, it's on stems around the plant. It's not just one section.
Okay. Sometimes Christmas cactus react that way when they're overwatered. So you might want to cut down on the watering a little bit. That's their, you know, their little signal to you that they don't have normal leaves like other plants. They have like these sections that are very succulent. So that might be signaling that it's got a little bit too much water. It could also be signaling that it's not getting enough light, because of course, you know, photosynthesis, it needs that light and for deep green leaves. So if you could give it more a brighter situation, maybe south, more south-facing. And Barb, just a thought, you know, and for all our listeners, always consider rotating your plant. You know, you're looking at it from the side that's not getting as much light. But if you keep rotating that plant, say, make it a quarter turn or a half turn every 2 weeks or so, that's going to help too.
That's very good advice. Barb, good luck with that. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in too. Open lines get you on pretty quickly here. The number to call is 800-642-1234. Or you could email us, and the email address is talk@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And we got an email from Mark. Is it possible to grow maidenhair ferns indoors? And if so, what sun and water and pot conditions are required?
Oh, that's a really interesting question, Mark. And I wish I could, you know, give you the thumbs up on that one. I definitely, you could bring a maidenhair fern indoors, but the issue is that they are, in my experience, they will always go dormant. Dormant is not dead. Those are two different things. But they will almost always, in my experience, always go into a dormant period. And that might look like dead to you, but it's not. Then in the spring, they will come back up again. But over the winter, it's not going to look like the beautiful thing it looked like during the summer.
I want to go back to the Christmas cactus for a minute, because somebody else is wondering, how do you get it to bloom every year, and do you need to fertilize it?
Good questions, both. Most of the cactus do not need a whole lot of fertilizer. They're from parts of the world that, you know, the soil is naturally lean. So, and about getting that, those blossoms to happen, you know, they're always breeding Christmas cactus and holiday cactus is what we call them nowadays, because they're such a, you know, they've taken the Thanksgiving cactus and the Easter cactus and the Christmas cactus, and they've, you know, the gene pool is, they keep breeding them together. So it's really hard to set your watch on exactly when this guy is going to burst into blossom. But, you know, so if it hasn't happened yet, I beg you to be patient.
Well, we actually had another question relating to that. Sylvia emailed, she bought a Thanksgiving cactus from a big box store before Thanksgiving. She selected a specimen that had a lot of flower buds, but only a few buds opened, and the others dried out or dropped. And she didn't overwater it. The plant looks healthy, but she lost the buds. What'd she do wrong?
You know, Sylvia, I don't think you did anything wrong. I think the place that you bought it from might have stressed it out in transit. That can happen. That you know, if it's traveling a long distance, maybe not in optimal conditions, the buds can be affected. But in general, it sounds like you've already lost some buds, so let's just talk quickly about how to keep them on. Sylvia, I think you had it absolutely right. You said you didn't water too often, and that's really key. Light is so key for, I don't find the Christmas cactus needs bright, bright, bright south, but they do need a good light source. So east or west, close to the light source is a really good idea. They are not really sensitive about heat, but I would say anywhere between 55 and 65 would be optimal.
Yeah, I had a big one in my my other office, and it west-facing, near a west-facing window, and it was pretty cool in there. And that thing flowered all the time. It was benign neglect with that one.
Benign neglect, actually, Larry, don't you think?
Yes. mine is living proof of it.
yeah. They really prefer that. And if you can, Larry's, the conditions he was just describing are actually, he thought he was being, stressful for it, but actually he was handing it its favorite conditions.
Oh, boy. Tom in Madison, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
Yeah, what's on your mind? Are you there? We lose Tom? We're not hearing you, Tom. Maybe try calling back again. Jeannie in Wausau will give you
Hello.
You're back, Tom?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is Tom from Madison.
All right. What was your comment?
I was going to inform you of overwintering poinsettias. You take your plant that you have, and you let it finish up its blossoming, and then you cut it off at the lowest green that you can find. And in the summertime, you put them outside in the bright sun, and they grow back vigorously, getting deep green leaves. And then in September, if you put them in a closet to make sure they only get 8 hours of sunlight a day, so you have to put them in the closet, take them out, put them in the closet, take them out, they will bloom at Christmas beautifully, beautiful big bracts.
Well, I think, Tom, that is really good advice, and that will do it. And I think it's a brilliant idea to do that cut back, because right there you have the solution to anybody's insect issues. That this is a way to keep your poinsettia year after year. They are beautiful plants and really remarkable. So I didn't mean to, in any way say that you shouldn't enjoy that beauty in your home. But I think Tom has the perfect solution there. But that said, you can also go out and succumb to buying another poinsettia the next Christmas and also enjoy it.
Tom, thank you very much for calling. Jeannie in Wausau, we'll go to you. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi. I am calling if you can take another comment about Christmas cactus.
Sure.
I have one that right now is about 3 feet wide and 1.5 feet tall from the ground level up. And it did bloom profusely in Thanksgiving, and it's still popping out a few little flowers. But I call it a holiday cactus because it will come out again, I'm sure, at Easter. It throws out a few flowers for my birthday in June. And, it's maybe it helps because I talk to it. I don't know. But I simply put it outside. And this year, I could keep it outside through October. And I make sure it doesn't get sunburnt. And then I bring it inside. And that's it. And, of course, don't overwater. Secondly, sometimes they die. But they hold on. It looks like they're alive. And if you kind of, juggle it or pull at it, you will find, oh, dead branch. Just pull it out. And the best success I had one year, the pot fell, broke in two. Got the most profuse blossoms thereafter.
Well, Jeannie, I think you have the secret with the I'm glad you mentioned that when people put their Christmas cacti outdoors, you might think that with the word cacti that they could take a lot of light, but that's really not the case. They sunburn so easily. So I'm so glad that you sort of cautioned the listeners about that issue.
Yeah. Jeannie, thank you so much for calling. Tova Martin, our guest today. Great to have her with us as we talk houseplants here on Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us for Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. You know, after the holidays, it's time to plan for spring, and the PBS Wisconsin Garden and Green Living Expo is one of the year's best places to get ideas. And at the start of the expo this year, Garden Talk, this program, will broadcast live. That's Friday, February 7th at 11 a.m. at the Alliant Energy Center in Madison. The broadcast is free to attend, but registration is required. But as a bonus, the registration includes entry to the expo on Friday after the show. So kind of a free ticket to the expo as well as to the program. And our guests, Lisa Johnson and Brian Huddleston, will share their gardening tips and take your questions. Lisa, of course, horticulture educator for UW-Madison Extension, and Brian directs the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison. Here's how to get those free tickets. You need to register. Go to WPR.org/presents. That's WPR.org/presents. And scroll down once you get there to see how to get your free tickets. And I would recommend that you not wait around too long, because I think it only holds, I don't know, somewhere 150, 200 people in that area. It's right at the Garden Expo. And so they have to limit the tickets. So again, register at WPR.org/presents. Scroll down to see how to get your free tickets, and you'll be able to see the show in person live. And then you can stroll through the Garden Expo. And Tova, I know you'd love going through the Garden Expo here in Madison.
I was listening to you, Larry, and I was thinking, gosh, I wish I wish I was closer. That would sounds like so much fun.
Yeah, and February, and you go inside, and it's warm and humid, and there's plants and all kinds of things to see. You can pretty much anything relating to gardening. So it's a lot of fun. Well, we've got Michael in Green Bay with a question. Let's go to Michael. Hi, Michael.
Hi. So when I called into the show, I said the wrong plant name. It's not Anthurium. It's a red moon cactus that I have.
Okay.
And I have not benign neglect. I have neglected this plant for almost a year now, and it has been still thriving. I've not watered it or added anything to the nutrients. And I'm wondering, like, what kind of care does the red moon cactus, like, need? Because it, like I said, I have not watered it for over a year now, and it has just been continuing to thrive.
Well, anything in the cactus realm, Michael, actually neglecting is not, don't be ashamed anyway. They like that. They do fine with it. If it's doing well, you probably have a lot of light for it. You don't need to fertilize most cacti. Really don't need a lot of fertilizer. I don't go big on fertilizing my cacti. I give them a good potting soil. I give all my plants good potting soil. And you've got to remember that when the bag says it's got compost in that organic potting soil, that means that there's nourishment in the soil. That's part of, part of what you're serving up. Its home is feeding it.
And you might want to, if you haven't watered it for a whole year.
Oh, he hasn't?
I think he said he hadn't watered it for a year.
Oh.
I think I'd put some water on it. I'm trying to picture what the soil would look like.
Well, here you go, Larry. Let's just talk one quick, brief minute about when you let a plant dry out too much, what to do. And I always suggest that people put that plant in a little, you know, dish of a little pan of water and let it really sponge up the water from below, because if you water that from the top, it's not, the soil might have lost its sponge action, and it might just be too parched to really take up water properly.
I think that's an excellent idea, Michael. You might want to do that. Put the pod in a dish with some water in it, and let the plant soak it up from below. There you go. Thank you. And Randy in Stevens Point, your turn. Hi, Randy.
Oh, hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
My question is about Hoyas. I'm calling about Hoyas. I'm growing, I have several Hoya plants. My favorites are the ones with the little crinkled up leaves. And we affectionately call those our tortellini plants. I'm growing them from cuttings that I first got from my friend Laureen probably over 40 years ago, and hers were just huge. They had stems that were probably 2 or 3 feet long, hanging down, and there were lots and lots of them. And I've always waited for my plants to get that big, and they never have. The stems are only probably about 2 feet long. And or at the most, maybe closer to a foot. I repot them about every 5 years, and they've got they look really healthy. They got southern windows, and I just don't know what to do to get them to grow as lavishly as Lorene's did.
Hmm.
You know, can I just say one little thing for the listeners that might not have grown a Hoya before, and that is, Hoyas do not like bright, bright light. They'll be perfect in your window that gets a lower light. They actually prefer that. They get stressed in a bright south window. So consider that. But I absolutely know I have a couple of the Hoyas that you described, Brandy, with the crinkled crinkled leaf. I call them fortune cookie plants because that's what they look like. But I find that, and they're easy to propagate also because they sometimes have little rootlets on the stems that you can tuck into the soil and just start another plant. But to get it to grow more rapidly, it's tricky because a Hoya will can stay in the same container for a really long time. But I find that if I give them fresh soil every few years, they, you know, just really seem to do a whole lot better in general. So I refresh the soil. I kind of, it got very large kind of wormy type of roots, and just shake out some of the soil from that and give them fresh soil, and that sometimes helps. That said, that can keep them from blossoming. They like to be pot bound to blossom well.
There you go, Randy. Thank you so much for calling. Tova Martin will be with us for another half hour on the show. We're going to take a quick look at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Tova. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk. You're listening to Garden Talk. Larry Mealer here. Our guest today can answer your questions about houseplants and outdoor plants. Tova Martin back with us. She's a perennial heirloom vegetable and cottage gardener, accredited as an organic land care professional and author of many gardening books, including the latest, The Garden in Every Sense and Season. So, do you have a plant question? Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk@WPR.org. And let's take a call. Phyllis in Winona, Minnesota, thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, actually, I have a comment about poinsettias, which are commonly believed to be really difficult to grow as houseplants. And I noticed that you and your guest made kind of a similar comment earlier. But I always had wonderful success with poinsettias. I would get them, you know, before Christmas, and cheapy ones. Actually, I lived in Davenport, Iowa, and the wonderful Van Veer Conservatory there after Christmas would sell off all their beautiful, beautiful poinsettias for a dollar a piece. And so that's how I started, and that's how I replenished them. But we maybe had the perfect conditions in our house. We had a south-facing bay window, so it got a lot of sun. It was in a room that we didn't use often, so there was no need to do this, keeping them in the dark half the day and, none of that, because the room was barely, in the winter it's dark in a room with no lights on. But anyway, I had some of those probably 6, 7, 8 years. They got quite large. What I would do is when it got warm enough to move plants outside, these things would still be blooming because they did not bloom. They weren't blooming by the holidays, but maybe by March, they were starting to get colorful. And so in May, when you'd normally think about moving plants outside, or June, I would move them out and they still looked beautiful outside for weeks. And then when they started looking kind of raggedy, I would cut them back quite a bit. Leave them out there. If the pots were really small, I would repot them into a larger pot. And then in the fall, I would bring them in, put them back in that bay window. And, again, after the holidays, usually they would bloom again or get their colors again. And this went on for years. Finally, they'd get woody and pretty large and didn't get the color like they used to. So I would retire those and replace it with another one of these $1 poinsettias.
Dollar poinsettias. Wow. Tova, wow. What do you think?
That's a, it sounds like Phyllis has got it. She's got the secret formula.
I like it. Phyllis, thanks for contributing that. Appreciate it. Colleen in Madison, your turn. Hi, Colleen.
Hi. Hey, I have a question. I have one of those older homes that doesn't have a lot of windows and doesn't have a lot of electrical outlets. And I'm trying to put as many houseplants in every room as possible, but I'm wondering if you have any recommendations on UV lights and what UV lights to use.
Oh, good question. I don't do that many grow lights. And you said that you have many many windows facing many directions.
She has fewer windows facing.
Oh, fewer windows. Okay. It's difficult to give a plant enough light without natural light. I find that, it's great to supplement it. But to tell you the truth, I've never, ever grown in a basement or that sort of situation. I'm not sure what to tell you. I'm probably not the best person to offer advice on that one.
Yeah, I'm not great on it either. So, Colleen, I hope you'll save that question maybe on another show, or even later, our final segment. There might be some information on UV lights with the tea plants, with the camellias. So stay listening. Liz in Plum City will go to you. Hi, Liz.
Hello.
Hi.
I want to go back to Christmas cactus.
Okay.
I've been taking care of a pretty substantially sized one for a friend of mine when she goes away for the winter. And it's been beautiful for the last 2 or 3 years. But this year I brought it home and I put it in the same place and I water it just the same, but it just wilted. It looks like it's dying. It's just wilted all over. And I'm wondering if there's anything I can do to resurrect it.
I mean, Liz, you're an angel. I mean, to take that plant, but I also think your friend is awfully sweet to grow the plant for the year, part of the year that it's not really performing, and let you enjoy the bounty of it. But often I do find that the issue with that when they start to look terrible does have to do with watering, and it could have been something that happened before, during the summer. Larry, did you all have a drought this summer?
We had a weird summer because we had, in the spring, it was very dry, I think, and then we got a lot of rain in the second half of the summer. So it was dry early, and then it was wet.
Yeah, we had a major drought toward the end of the summer, and
you know what? Before let me break in. It was lots of rain in the spring, and then it was dry later. That's I had it just reversed.
Yeah, if you didn't keep water on your plants and. You know, Liz, the situation is that as the plant grows, the root system grows. And even though, sometimes you think you put on enough water, something like a Christmas cactus, which really does have quite a strong network, a large network of roots. So as those roots grow and increase, you've got to, kind of recalibrate your watering and think a little bit more about it and or repot the plant.
So you're thinking maybe more water?
I'm thinking that maybe it dried out a little too much. I personally find that to be an issue with my Christmas cacti, or holiday cacti, because it's sort of an amalgamation of several ones.
Okay. Liz, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. No one has called in about amaryllis bulbs, and that's certainly this time of year a good one. How do you choose a good one?
Gosh, you can hardly go wrong.
I know.
I mean, there's so many. Basically, they only choose the creme de la creme to offer for sale. But can I just tell you my favorite?
Sure.
I have a favorite one called Rapido, and Rapido blooms. It's actually in bud right now. It started a couple of weeks ago. And it blooms really early, and they just keep throwing up spike after spike after spike of flowers. But I guess what you want to think about with an amaryllis is getting them into good light as quickly as, as soon as you see that growth, get them into good light, because that will keep the stem short-ish, and you won't have to stake it. And that's my secret, anyway, on the amaryllis.
You see a lot of them, this bulb in a box kind of thing, and you wonder, well, how do I know if that one's healthy?
But they almost always, they can stand so much neglect that they almost always perform.
Yeah,
don't you think?
Yeah, I do. What do you do after the foliage dies back on those?
Well, that's almost, it is almost a very similar to your poinsettias, in that they like they do like a dormant period. They do like to sort of slow down a little bit. My amaryllis, what I do is in after they bloom, and I let them continue to bloom, as you know, I don't say, oh, it's all over, because often there's a repeat bloom. But I take them and I put them outside in spring, as soon as the danger of frost is over, and I let them enjoy life outdoors. I water them like my other house plants, even though they're, you know, it's just foliage for them at that point. But I let the foliage store up nutrients, and then I let them go into dormancy in the fall, you know, mm-hmm. in preparation. So I withhold water for a little period then, and then I, you know, if they haven't stopped growing, if they haven't died back, I cut off the foliage and let it come again.
You know, Kurt in Columbia County has a question, I think, relating to amaryllis. So let's go there. Kurt, hi.
Hello, Larry and guest. I didn't want to call in, but I have an amaryllis started about a month ago, and I'm measuring as we speak the stalk from the top of the bulb to the bottom of the flower, which is about to open, is 26 inches. And this is an enormous length I've never seen before. And I've last watered it about a week or plus ago. What do you think?
I think it's, rather than water, I think it's more about light. And the weird thing about that is that I can't say, you know, it depends on what kind of weather we've been having. And if you don't have an awful lot of, you know, a very sunny time, then it is going to stretch a little bit more. For light, that's just, you know, it's something that we're not in charge of.
So that's why it's looking for more light. That's why it's growing.
Yeah.
There, Kurt, there you go. Maybe give it a little more light if you can. If you want to shorten it up. Well, you're not going to shorten it up, but if you don't want it to grow much taller.
And also the next flower stalk might be a whole different story.
Yeah. Yep. Never know on that. Kurt, good luck. Thank you for calling. And let's turn to Catherine in Wausau. Catherine, hi.
Hi. How are you? Great show, always.
Thank you.
Anyway, let's go back to the Christmas cactus.
Okay.
I have several, and I water them with, not always, but most of the time with my leftover coffee from my morning, afternoon coffee. They love it. And I also use fish emulsion on most of my plants. They love that too. And also the Christmas cactus, in the warm weather, I take outside and I put it under a tree so that they don't have direct sun. And they all do well. They especially like coffee. They like their morning coffee.
Well, that's good to know.
That was a new one on me, Catherine.
I new one on me too.
But the fish emulsion, I've used that often. That's kind of a low fertilizer you're going to get there.
I swear by it, actually. I love my fish emulsion. Einstein, my kitty, he's fond of fish emulsion day too. just because it smells good to him, I think. he doesn't, you know, my kitty doesn't in any way eat or have. He isn't a nibbler, and he doesn't bother my houseplants. But and I trained him to do that. But he loves the plants. He just loves being around my plants.
Well, Catherine, I want to go back to you for a second. Are you a decaf person with your coffee, or are you regular?
I'm a regular caffeinated, and my other plants like that too. My shamrock plant, and if I have enough coffee left over, I just put it in, and they pop right up. They love it. They love their coffee.
I didn't even know. I mean, I didn't know it was a possibility even.
Catherine, thank you so much. You know, we always learn something new here on WPR and on Garden Talk. That's one I had not heard of, but it's one I'm going to have to give it a shot to see what happens. That's for sure. Thank you so much for calling, Catherine. Appreciate it. And I did, before I forgot about it, I wanted to mention just once more on that Wisconsin Garden and Green Living Expo. That's February 7th. We're on February 7th. It actually runs Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But on Friday, February 7th at 11, we'll be doing our show live, our Garden Talk show live. It's a free event for you to attend, but registration is required. And as a bonus, registration includes entry to the expo on Friday after the show. And Lisa Johnson, Brian Huddleston will be sharing gardening tips. But you need to register, and I wanted to mention that again. You probably shouldn't wait around, because there's a limited number of people who can fit into the space. So to register, go to wpr.org/presents and scroll down to see how to get your free tickets. But like I said, wpr.org/presents. And don't wait around too long, because those tickets, I am pretty sure, are not going to last forever. You know, one other, orchids have become more available, certainly in the last decade or so. The blooms can last a long time. Do you have many orchids?
I have. My favorite ones are my Phalaenopsis, the tropical lady slippers. I just love those. Many of them are budding up now. This is their time to perform. And last year, I had three flowers that lasted for 3 months.
Ooh!
Now that's, you know, I know orchids are a little more pricey than your other plants, but that makes it so worth it.
Yeah, when you get 3 months. I mean, do you get them to rebloom?
I do. I do. I keep, you know, I know that it's keeping them a long time, because they only really do perform in the winter. So the rest of the year, but 3 months is it, and they're so beautiful. So getting them to rebloom, you do have to keep them watered even when they're not blooming, and it's hard to tell when, you know, an orchid plant is dry. So that is one plant that I do think, like, every 3 days I'm going to run some water on it. Mine are just in fir bark.
Gotcha. Yeah, and that's where they, I think, do the best or perform the best, is in fir bark. I'm trying to think. We've talked, watering has come up. We've talked about sunlight. We've talked about maybe not worrying too much about a few drop leaves. One thing that, you know, if somebody's getting a new plant for the holidays here, is avoiding temperature extremes. And you can have, if you've got the plant next to a register, or if you, on the other end of the scale, if you got it too close to a window and the window's cold, I think temperature is one thing to kind of, those extremes are something. And I think you might have mentioned that earlier.
You know, I find that worm is more of an issue, partly because, you know, Larry, I sort of got a little spoiled this year, and I turned my thermostat up just 2 degrees. I know, just 2 degrees, and it when I turned it up, I did have a little bit more trouble with aphids than I've ever had before. So the warm temperatures sometimes can be a little, you know, insects can like it a little bit too much too. But I find that moderation in all things. If you keep your plants, I find that they can take it quite cool, actually, because my home is quite chilly. If you could see me, you would see that I'm always wearing my mother's hand-knit woolen sweaters at this time of year.
Yeah, I think I understand what you're saying. I have geothermal heat in the house. Put that in 12 years ago or so, and I actually probably keep it a little too warm.
Yeah, it's a fine line.
Just because it isn't costing me much to keep it that way.
So yeah, that it can get too hot, for sure, and then always keep in mind that close to the window panes is a little cooler. I actually draw curtains at night, thermal curtains at night, or, you know, some people have thermal shades that they use. So that helps quite a bit, especially during these long days.
Yeah. Well, Tova, you know, it's so always so much fun to talk with you.
It is such a pleasure and an honor, and I'm so grateful. I'm so in love with my WPR audience.
They ask great questions, don't they? And
they
and they contribute information. Who to thunk about what coffee water?
Well, what about, you know, can we just say that the Christmas cactus was the hero this year?
It sure was. We had more questions about Christmas cactus or comments than any other plant. And you know what? That's sometimes how things go. We get going on a particular item, and we stick with it more than I ever thought we would.
And then we learn. At the very end, we learn the coffee tricks. So there you go.
Tova, thanks again. Look forward to your next visit. Thank you so much for being with us today. Tova Martin is the author of many gardening books. She's out there in Connecticut, where she's got literally hundreds of houseplants in her home. And I don't think she even knows the actual number, but they are everywhere. Tova Martin, you might go online to her site and you'll see some photos. It's great to have her with us. Have you ever thought about growing tea plants? Plants that you can then harvest a little bit and have yourself some tea. We'll talk about how to do that next. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. Great to have you along for Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. You know, Wisconsin's it's a little too cold to grow tea plants outside, but that doesn't mean we can't grow them inside. And today we're going to talk about growing tea with author and tea expert Christine Parks. Together with her husband, David, she's developed Camellia Forest Tea Gardens in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Her family has worked for decades collecting, propagating, and testing camellia cultivars for hardiness. She was chair of the Tea Committee of the American Camellia Society and a founding member of the U.S. League of Tea Growers. So as we talk with her, I hope you'll join in. What have you always wanted to know about growing tea? Now's your chance to ask an expert. You can give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Christine Parks, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. This is the first time I've talked to anybody in Wisconsin about growing tea.
Well, I tell you what.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
Well, you know, we haven't grown a lot of tea here in Wisconsin. We haven't grown any. And frankly, I didn't even think of the U.S. as a tea-growing country. And
that's right. Historically, people have no idea that people have been trying to grow tea in the U.S. since colonial times. It grows very well here, just like ornamental camellias in certain parts of the mid-Atlantic eastern states, to the southeast and out west in California, up through Oregon and Washington. So, but I know people growing tea in a lot of different conditions. There are some people who just love growing things and learning new things about plants. Some people love tea and they just want to have a tea plant and get to know what it is, what this plant is that the source of all the wonderful green and black and oolong teas that many of us love. Anyway, my passion is, I've been learning. I'm on a, lifelong learning journey in tea. But I also love sharing what we're learning I learn from everybody's questions as well as we go. So I can tell you lots of stories.
Tell us
your questions, whatever spikes your interest.
Well, we've got callers already online with a question. Joshua in Sun Prairie, let's go to you. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thank you. So I've been growing indoor plants for a while, and I also really like tea. I was wondering if there's any way I could grow a black tea indoors, maybe that I could harvest year-round. And if I were to grow that, what kind of spices could I blend with it to make like a chai at home?
That's a really good question. Well, first of all, you can make all types of tea from a single type of plant. So there isn't a black tea plant, although there are some that may make better black tea than others or different flavors or aromas. But I wanted to emphasize before we go any further that tea camellias generally are not a happy house plant. They are, they like having a dormant season. A lot of people think they're tropical plants, but they're not really. They do well, they do well in some tropical areas, but those are certain varieties. We grow a few of them where we are, but, if you want to really succeed with an indoor-outdoor tea plant, you need to find a cool porch that is not freezing, or a little outdoor greenhouse that's not freezing. The tea plants, the leaves themselves, can handle below freezing temperatures, maybe down to 20 or 25 before they start being at risk of any damage, but the roots can't freeze. But if they get too hot, they really don't love the dry, they didn't evolve in a dry climate, so they don't love those comfortable warm winter temperatures that we do. So a lot of people I know who grow tea in pots will bring their plant inside in the winter when it's very cold, or they'll figure out a high sort of a cool space in the house, put good lights in it, either on a cold porch or something, and then make sure that there's sufficient humidity, because that's the other thing that the tea plant needs to survive. Yeah, but in terms of, you know, so the other lesson to learn, so I think of it as if you're having an indoor tea plant or an indoor-outdoor tea plant, it's a good chance to get to know the plant, but it generally takes about 3 to 5 years of growth. I mean, they're really almost, they're shrubs, they're evergreen shrubs, and they will live for 100 years, but they take, you know, 3 to 5 years to the point where you can even begin harvesting them, because they just need to put on their woody branches, and you need to get more and more branches through pruning to get, because at the end of each branch where you have the new growth, it's that first two leaves and a bud of new growth that you would harvest for tea. And so it takes some tending, and then you can begin harvesting it, and maybe a small handful of those shoots would make a small cup of tea. So over the course of the age and the growing plant, you'll have more and more shoots to harvest, and then you can blend them as you like. I know some people like to blend them with herbs, but for a black tea, I love using citrus, actually. We have a cold hardy citrus here. I don't know that it grows in Wisconsin, but it's called Ponceras trifoliata, and it's a little bit like the citrus that might make a little bit of an Earl Grey smell. But I love the chai spices and just a little black tea that you make on your own, you can add to that. Although, frankly, homegrown and homemade tea is quite precious all on its own. It is so delicious. It will give you a sense of what tea can be, because most of what we get in the grocery stores are, you know, it's old. It's been exposed to the elements because it's usually powdered in tea bags. And fresh tea that you've picked yourself, it's a little bit like, you know, a tomato that you've grown in your garden versus the one you get at the grocery store.
Yeah.
It's that different.
Wow.
A lot of people are like, you know, it spoils them. Or it gives them an appreciation, and then they're willing to, you know, maybe I've heard life's too short to waste on bad tea. That's one of the things people will say to me. They've begun drinking fresher homegrown tea, even if it's not the best tea in the world, which, you know, just like wine, there are competitions and wonderful teas made in different countries. The freshness is still really, really special.
So. Yeah, and that's true. And tomatoes and many, many, many other things, as you were talking about, Christine. Joshua, thanks.
Yeah.
Your book, by the way, Growing Your Own Tea, The Complete Guide to Cultivating, Harvesting, and Preparing. The cultivating part of it, I'm not sure that we're going to ever be able to do that here. You do have some, though, information on. I love the history part, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
well, that's where we started. It was supposed to be sort of an ode to this living history of U.S. grown tea that most people don't know about. And then we're like, well, people really also want to know how to grow it, so.
You get through that.
I'll let you finish your question.
No, I was just... I think you also have information on growing it from pots and growing it inside.
Yes, we do. And I'd like to put out more video information on that. I've been putting together little bits of learning materials. When I have like a student intern from the local university will help me put together an educational video. We have some on Patreon, and we're releasing little bits into YouTube world. But, you know, I'm not a big media feature. I'm just trying to make things accessible to people. So, you know, we grow tea in pots a lot because we ship them to people all over the country, and in fact, sometimes even outside of the country, because it's not that easy to buy a tea plant.
Yeah, and in fact, maybe talk about your business. I think people are interested in it.
Well, it started as a business my father-in-law was a camellia expert, and my mother-in-law was actually born and grew up in China. And over many years, he had an expansive collection, and she decided that she would start a little nursery making plants available to people because they would often ask. And then my husband and I moved out. After we were married, we moved back to North Carolina from where we were living out west, and the nursery expanded a great deal, and it turned out tea was one of the most popular camellias we sell. So, you know, we propagate plants from seeds. We grow them from cuttings. You know, once we know a plant has certain desirable characteristics, we will make clonal cuttings or cultivars so that we can sell them as, you know, and they will grow maybe a little different in different environments, but usually you know what you're getting. When you get it from seed, you have a lot more diversity, and we like that too. But so we have a large garden where we grow many different tea cultivars and types, and we continue to grow and get more specimens from other sources, other countries. We grow tea from all over the world, basically. Probably the most northern area would be the state of Georgia, or the Republic of Georgia, where the Sochi Winter Olympics were held.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of an interesting story because, you know, 100 plus years ago, they were trying to develop tea that would grow in that area, in the Caucasus Mountains. And they came out, they make the plants that we have from that area make a really nice black tea, and they're very cold hardy. So that means that they're less affected by, you know, temperatures below 20 degrees.
Maria in Madison has a comment for us. Let's go there.
Okay. Oh, hi. Hi, Gary. This is so interesting. I never knew it was possible to get answered, or, you know, for you to answer my call. I'm from India, and I was just sharing the thought that in back home in India, the tea is the old-fashioned way of making tea, and we add milk and sugar and cloves and cardamom. And actually, and ginger. And that's what chai is, kind of, you know. And this is so strange that now, after coming to America, tea is any healthy, leaves, boil them, and like chamomile or curry leaf, add a pinch of turmeric, and add cumin. And I'm learning what tea is now. It's not the old-fashioned what I know as chai tea. I just love to. It's amazing how much of this tea has become so popular.
Yeah,
a lot of people drink it for the health benefits. You know, the traditional Camellia sinensis tea, which we think of in black and oolong, sometimes they'll call the herbal things tisanes. You know, the purists are very particular about that. But, you know, that was originally, you know, considered a medicine in ancient China, right? And then they started discovering that it could taste really good, especially if you prepared it nicely. And different cultures prepare that differently. And we're actually planning on making a chai tea for a little celebration this weekend in our tea studio because it's so delicious. And we have some ginger that we grow on site. So we love being able to mix in things that we have in our gardens.
Oh, that's wonderful. Maria.
Take a lot of inspiration from the world of tea around the world. That's part of the learning. And
It was sort of, I think in your, I was reading your history, and it's sort of, it was kind of an interesting story. Who knows if it's actually true about someone in China discovering it to begin with when a leaf fell in his water or something.
Yeah. but really, truly, it's the processing of the leaf which brings out the good flavors. The tea itself, the leaf, has many compounds in it that are meant to protect the young leaves, so you never use the old leaves. But the young leaves have a lot of compounds, these catechins, which are antioxidants. They're also a little bit like a sunscreen for the tea plant. And they also, like the caffeine, is bitter, and it defends against insects. So we don't use a lot of pesticides. In fact, we use no pesticides. But, you know, it's interesting that, you know, if you were to eat a leaf off the plant straight, it would be very bitter and not taste so good. But if you put it just in a pot of water, it wouldn't taste like much of anything until you started drying it one way or the other. So
there you go. Christine Parks, our guest today, and she'll take your questions too at 800-642-1234. Or you could email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. Christine Parks, our guest today. She's worked for decades collecting, propagating, and testing camellia cultivars for hardiness, and is co-author of the book Grow Your Own Tea, The Complete Guide to Cultivating, Harvesting, and Preparing. And join in. Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk@WPR.org. You know, a lot of people here, because we can't grow the plant outside, maybe you could describe what a camellia plant looks like and the kind of flowers that it produces, the plant.
Yeah, well, like a traditional ornamental camellia, which is, you know, there's a couple main types, but they have evergreen leaves. They bloom in the fall, winter, and early spring. And some of the blooms are very formal. They look almost like roses. Others look like, I like to call them like waddled up tissue paper flowers.
Yeah. That's a good description.
And the tea plant also flowers. And it flowers in the fall. Now, I wanted to tell you a story before I forget about, you know, I know that enterprising people who want to grow plants indoors often figure out a way. And so do farmers. So we have a customer, long-term customer from Michigan, who had an herb farm. She was a former nurse, and she believed in healing qualities of herbs and teas, and she added Camellia sinensis tea plants to her greenhouses. She planted them in the ground and put a huge double-walled greenhouse over them, and they survived for many years. In fact, she even harvested and sold tea to someone from Japan. And got a lot of, I mean, that was so rare. She got a good, good rate on that. But unfortunately, I think at some point the greenhouse collapsed due to heavy snow. So, but the point being, you know, I know that where there's a will and ingenuity, there's a way. It's just that it doesn't want to be like your normal tropical house plants. You know, something out in the backyard with a greenhouse, don't let the roots freeze, et cetera. There's also someone up in Alaska growing tea in a geothermally heated greenhouse. And that's offered up its own challenges because they have those extensive long summer days and the dark nights, so they have to figure out their grow lights and the temperatures and so forth to make the tea plants happy.
Tea plants require a fair amount of water, do they not?
Well, they do. They like acidic soils. They also like them to be well drained. So here's the kicker, though. They don't want to really dry out for very long, but they don't want to have wet feet. So, you know, we use a mixture of like pine bark and soil with compost. Some people will use peat moss, but you have to be really careful not to let these let the roots sit in water for too long. So they like regular rain if they're outside. They like regular water throughout the growing season. I know somebody's trying to grow tea in Central California where it doesn't rain in the summer, so they're having to irrigate all summer long because those plants, you know, they need to have continual rain, and they really are, you know, they originated in Southeastern Asia and sort of spread up with the Buddhist traditions up into Japan and Korea, and then they also, unbeknownst to the Westerners who were they were inventing everything at the time. It was growing in Assam, India, and the British came and they were like, we're going to grow tea here. And they took some of the tea that grew well in cooler climates in China and planted it down in Assam, and it didn't do very well. But that's what's growing up in Darjeeling.
Wow.
Now, those small leaf varieties. And then the larger leaf varieties, you know, make a really lovely, robust black tea. And there have been a lot of crosses over between the two types because they do, you know, they do, sorry, it's after lunch. My brain, the words elude me. They don't cross with themselves. So if you have one tea plant, you're unlikely to ever have a tea seed, but they do cross. And they even cross with ornamental camellias, but the tea from the ornamental camellia never tastes very good at all. So,
what's your advice for buying good quality tea?
You mean tea that's already been processed?
Yeah.
Well, I think you can find either really nice, you know, there may be small tea shops in a town or whatever in your local areas, but then there are a lot of online resources for buying good quality whole leaf tea. You know, one of the places I started with, and I know they've been around forever, is, oh gosh, now I got that word wrong too. I'll send it back to you. You know, Adagio tea is one. I can't really promote specific brands, but there are many, both old and new, that, you know, make it their life's worth bringing in tea to the U.S. And, you know, they'll go and travel and meet the farmers if they're really great companies.
I had a Chinese friend who invited me to a tea, and it was just the two of us. And it was a really nice experience how she prepared it and we sat and drank the tea. Is there a way to brew a perfect, she had a way to brew a perfect pot of tea. What's your method?
Well, it depends on what tea you're making. Like a green tea, I might use a lower temperature of water, so not boiling. If you use boiling water on it, you're going to extract it and get some of the bitterness out really quickly. So, you know, a lower temperature, but I like, I love my oolong teas, and I like to brew them at just under boiling, and maybe go for 2 or 3 minutes. And, you know, in the world, once you get tea snooty, snobby, whatever, you start, instead of using teaspoons to measure out your whole leaf tea, you might use a scale.
Oh.
And weigh out. But what is the perfect cup of tea? It's what you like.
Yeah.
So it's what you like the best, you know. And there are certain books, there are lots of books about how to brew tea, and I think we probably put a little bit of guidelines in our book as well. But there's a lot of books about whole leaf tea and all sorts of things.
Christina, it's been a real pleasure. I hope we can do this again. Thank you so much for being with us today. Christine Parks, she and her husband David developed Camellia Forest Tea Gardens in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and their book is Grow Your Own Tea, The Complete Guide to Cultivating, Harvesting, and Preparing. Great to have her with us today. Great to have our team here as well, to recognize them, Clara Neipert and Joel Patnaud, our producers, technical directors Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins, our executive producer Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller, and thank you for listening to Garden Talk here on WPR News.